outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain. The God Chain. The God Chain.
We're in studio due to triple header.
Well, maybe. I don't know that I've got the voice or brain or stamina.
You've been suffering under a cold.
Last 5 days have been the worst 5 days since I've had heart surgery.
I didn't even get a genuine hug for fear of bugging me with your bugs.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to pass it on, so we did an air hug.
Yeah, nice.
It's not quite as good, but it does what it needs to do. I'm just hoping I can get through this without hacking a dog up and
there you go.
You know, somehow keeping my voice strong enough to go. And laughing definitely is not going to help me today.
Okay, so. I'll try to hold back, but no promises at all.
No, I know we always try and mess up the other one, so I fully expect your onslaught. That's why I've got my sleep mask on, okay. So I can't see you.
No laughing, sorry.
Hey, I saw a place for you.
What?
Man, you should have been with me a couple weeks ago.
That's by the lake thing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I saw one of your pictures.
Oh, the most beautiful lake. It's about five times the size of Shaver Lake. And it's the Duke Power Company.
Okay.
Created this lake out of a huge basin that was, you know, filled with whitewater rapids. Big dispute over creating this lake years and years ago. And someone that's becoming a friend of mine and a former graduate of the university I attended invited us there to work on a friend's book, who's also connected to the university and or was in the past. And he's out on this point where he's got 270-degree view of the lake.
Ooh.
And this lake is huge.
Ooh.
And I'm sitting there at, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It is glass all the way across the lake. Of course, it's winter. So I'm not skiing, but I mean, it's...
But you could get a wetsuit.
Man, no, yeah. No, I'm not that there. Wet, dry suit.
What state are we talking about?
This is South Carolina.
South Carolina.
And it is just...
Ooh.
And the big thing, they sold 30 lots on the lake, and then a conservancy group bought the rest of the shoreline. Because
they
didn't want to develop this lake.
So did you get me one?
No, the 30 were sold years ago. Years and years. He has, and not only does he have he has the best because it's on the point. So all the other houses are behind him.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
That's pretty nice. Did you find some inspiration, I would hope?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Lots of distraction.
Every morning.
I'm sure.
No, well, it was too cold to do anything fun on it. So
okay.
We didn't do anything fun.
It was pretty and you saw it.
He also, because not everybody likes swimming in the lake, he also had an infinity pool off the backside of the house.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're roughing it.
Yeah, he wants to come back in the summer. I think I'm finding my way there.
Okay.
But
nice.
Boy, we did some work on my friend's Civil War era novel and cut out, started with 67,000
words. Yeah, you cut out another book.
In the first session. And we didn't really cut out stuff. We trimmed. We just trimmed off the fat and a little more fat than we thought. You know, I was hoping to get to 40, got to 30.
Yeah, I was going to say.
33.
I saw those stats. I went, that's some serious trimming.
It's a fruitful week. It was fun collaborating on that book. Can't wait till other people get to read it. So here we are. I'm Wayne Jacobson, even though the voice is not familiar.
Probably. I'm Brad Cummings, and my laugh is familiar.
And welcome to the God Journey. We're going to give it a go again here today and see where we end up.
Come home.
You've been out in the Pacific Northwest, up Vancouver.
I have.
And away.
In search of film financing?
Yeah, so if anybody out there wants to help finance film,
please do.
Give Brad a call.
Yes.
At the same time, I've got 4 books, man. I've got 4 books that I think are worthy of finding a place in the world. And I'm really wrestling with how I get them there.
Yeah?
Yeah, really. Part of me, I can do them through live stream like we've done, and as part of me at my age doesn't want to keep kicking into the book publishing trade.
No.
Also, with our track record there, knowing that once you start down that road, you get into contracts with people and people change, and just not really wanting
to. I wish that was not the case.
I know, but it is. So I'm not only going down that road, and then I'm talking to some publisher people I know and seeing what we could do there. We can have that conversation someday if you're still doing stuff with Windblown, but it all goes back to get an agent. And if you're an agent and you listen to the God Journey, awesome. But I just have never met one that isn't a little bit schmarmy, you know? I mean that with the utmost love and compassion, concern.
That a Kavelta fish. Nice.
And I guess I feel it's a bit schmarmy too, because you're actually hiring somebody to like be your promoter who's got to push Wayne Jacobson and Wayne Jacobson's platform and Wayne Jacobson's this and that.
You know what? I do wish that things could be pushed from a compelling content place. I really, at the end of the day, go like, you know what? Most people aren't looking for celebrity. They're looking for something that's actually going to touch them.
I know, but booksellers don't know how to sell books apart from attaching it to a celebrity. But they don't know how to sell
books.
Oh, that's true. Absolutely true. I don't either. So I'm not thinking I got the key to this.
No, but I think the world out there, honestly, is hungry for stuff that's real. And they don't want the sales pitch. They really don't. I mean, I think people even try to mimic genuineness as if it's a sales pitch. And I'm going like, okay, that's schmarmy. That's the word you got going on there?
Schmarmy.
Schmarmy?
I don't even know if that's a word.
I don't know. But
sounds good.
Yeah, it fits.
I was going to say something a little less endearing. So when you create your own word, you just can't say it's got a tinge of yuck, but it's not really telling the full
I get it.
Unvarnished truth of how much.
But I do. I think there's such a hunger left, right, and center for things that are real and things that actually really work. Because I think so many people have tried, in air quotes, so many different things and come up so dissatisfied, so discouraged because they thought they were doing the thing and it's like, it's just not working.
Or even just to find a good story. You know, it's just that everything's become a formula now. Even some of my fun writers I like to read, it's just like reading the same book over and over again. They got this formula and the publisher just makes them work it and they work in that formula. And you go, wow, where's the beauty, creativity, where's the one-off? Where's something that's just really special and you enjoy it and it's not repackaged, remade, distorted, and yet everybody's trying to make top dollar off everything they can do. And platform's the only way to know how to do it. So I get where publishers are stuck in terms of, you know, we got to have a platform. We got to know we can just break even on this book. And
I love the stories I'm working on because they all got that ring of genuineness on them.
Yeah, I like the stories I'm working on too. But you know what? It's going to be for an audience of three. My wife and I and my daughter.
Woo!
Yeah.
Come on, baby. Live for an audience of one. That's fine.
I don't mind doing that either. But I feel like the people really love to get their hands on some of these other tools. So
it'll happen.
We'll see.
It'll happen.
I'm at that point of going, okay, God, where do we take these and how do we get them there? And I'm no clarity at all. And it's hard thinking through my medicated haze. So
yes.
I'm going to wait till the medication's clear and then figure it out from there.
It's a little, like today's weather's a little congested, is it?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's raining again. It's supposed to just rain buckets for a couple of days.
Yeah, it is. And we're supposed to get up Shaver Lake, see my dad, but they've got 5 feet of snow on the ground and more coming right now. So, and some rain on top of it. So I'm not even sure we can get up there this weekend. We're going to give it a shot anyway, see if we can. Once they get through this storm, these two storms coming through today and tomorrow, the bad ones.
This is good, though.
No, man.
We need the snowpack.
Yep. Can't get enough of that, for sure.
That's good.
It is good. I'm not complaining. We're just hoping to get up and see my dad, but may not make it up there. In fact, one of the guys up there says, don't come, man. Nobody's having fun up here. It's horrible. We weren't really coming to have fun. We were just coming to sit inside with dad anyway. So we're not going to do much schmarming down the hillsides. So anyway, Betty Ann had some fun with our 666 podcast.
Yes.
She wrote this, Betty Ann from Kentucky. I'm a big fan of your podcast. Mostly listen while I'm out in the barn mucking horse stalls. Well, hi, Betty. I hope you're mucking some today. It's a bright spot in my week when I'm doing the job that can become mundane. So right after New Year's, I'm listening to 666 and just chuckling along with you when my phone goes dead. And I mean the black screen of death. Nothing I could do revives it. Whoa, I know Satan little less has got no power over me. But did his minions sneak into my electronics? And when I got back to the house and started examining my phone, I realized the extreme cold, it was about 4 degrees, sucked all the life out of my battery. A recharge and everything was okay. It made me smile and then winced to realize for a brief moment I gave thought that maybe the S guy could have infiltrated my phone. I hope you get a chuckle out of this. Keep on spreading grace and freedom as I keep on spreading horse manure out of my stall.
Nice.
That's a good comparison, right?
Yes.
Keep spreading it as I'm spreading my horse manure.
We're both handing out fertilizer. Woohoo!
Yeah.
But you know what? I do think there are electronic demons.
Okay.
I do.
Okay.
They foul up sound systems all the time.
So the question is, were they here before there was electronics?
No.
Oh, they're
crazy. They came with the invention.
Okay, so
he's the prince of power of the air. He's what makes it crackle and snap, pop, all that stuff. He does.
I think it's nuts.
I lay hands on consoles and I pray for them.
Good.
And I have the gift of casting out foul electronic spirits. You don't believe me?
I'm glad you're laughing. I really am. Because I think you go to any concert venue of a secular nature, they're going to have the same bugs and the same sound systems.
Right. And they can do the same deliverance.
And they're going to lay hands on boards in similar ways.
Yes. Hey, I'm in for whatever works, man.
I've laid hands on a few boards now and then.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, not been gently. I'm of the, once you smack it upside the head good, it sometimes works. That's the old TVs, you know, they wouldn't work well and you slap them on the side and some tube would... But solid state stuff
doesn't. Like a Smith Wigglesworth anointing.
Doesn't work the same way. Yeah,
just, it was very violent with the way.
Well, the
he
Benny
prayed.
Hinn slap somebody upside the head. They'll
sure.
go over. They'll
okay.
go down
nice.
On the ground.
Nice.
I'm sure they will.
Very good.
Hey, so I was reading Time magazine the other day. Interesting. In fact, this is
other. This something you do regularly?
Yeah, I read.
I
it
only do it when you tell me to.
Is that right?
Pretty much.
I've been reading it for 45 years or longer. Yeah, I just
it's meandered into the weeds.
Well, it's as some people say, it's a website that publishes on paper for some strange reason. I haven't touched a paper copy in forever. I get it digitally, but I like reading something that doesn't necessarily fit my point of view.
That's good.
I like reading other people's
points of view.
That's how
you learn and grow.
I learned some other stuff about this. Is interesting because this was actually from October 25, and it's not really the article that's important. It's kind of what he kind of pulls out of it. But he says. He talks about a survey that I think we talked about briefly here. I did with somebody. I'm not sure if it was you or someone else, but that the whole animosity in our culture right now is driven by 6% of the people on the left and 8% of the people on the right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, those are your...
How do they know that it's just 6 and 8?
They did this More in Common, released a comprehensive survey of America's hidden tribes. They found that 8% of Americans are progressive advocates.
Okay.
And they're all white, almost. They're on that side. And then that's there are weird. 6% who are devoted conservatives on this side, and they're very wealthy. And they use their money to drive the conflict. It's the, you know, the people that are always mentioned, Soros and the Koch
he's
brothers.
On the right.
No, he's not on the right. But it's the same thing. It's both sides. And they're saying most people in the middle, they called the...
it's the mass missing middle. We know about them.
They called them the exhausted majority. Just not... But as they're talking about some of that and what drives all that, I thought this is interesting. Unless he said, this is a comment, and this is from David French, the writer. Unless you're among the tiny group of people who exercise actual substantial political authority, each of us can only have a large influence on a small number of people and a small influence on a large number of people. In other words, we have the potential to transform a life. We have minimal capacity to individually change American politics. And his comment was how much of our time we spend, whether it's on Facebook or social or whatever, we're angry at what's going on in politics and we're trying to say things to our friends, whatever, and nobody's listening because people only listen to their friends if they agree with them, but after that, they don't. And he says we do have impact. So this was the kicker. This is what caught my eye. Not long ago, I was deeply convicted by an offhanded comment at my church. A woman lamented that she was too busy for her community. She was too busy for the people she could influence most. That's me, I thought. That is my most fundamental flaw. I don't know my neighbors well, but you can be sure that I know when someone is wrong online. I sometimes struggle to provide even my own friends who've battled addiction and alcoholism with sufficient support. Life gets busy after all, and there are always libs to own. Libs to own?
I don't know.
That's what it says.
I think that's true. There's always libs to own.
I think it's ribs to eat, but I don't know what libs to own means. This is the inversion of our priorities from the neighborhood whose life I can help change to a nation I can't save. That's an interesting perspective.
I do think that we spend an awful lot of energy just chasing our little cyber tails and what seems to be little swirling eddies of conflict. And I just don't know. I have removed myself from the social media realms and just going like, okay, there's moments where I feel the nudge to kind of do little stuff, but quickly I end up going like, oh, I don't like what this does. I really don't, because I don't feel like it allows for a meaningful exchange. It's great for a one-way push. You know, it's like if I want to say something or I want to get this heard, but it's not like it allows for a real meaningful meeting of minds and a sharing of thoughts, which I end up going like, unless you're really doing that, you're not learning a ton. And it's like you're advocating for an outcome as opposed to really trying to understand a person.
Yeah, and you're not, for whatever conversation you're having, even trumpeting something out on social media, you don't move the needle. You don't move anybody's needle. Even the politicians in Washington are screaming at each other and not moving each other's needles, right? No one's coming to a better understanding.
Yeah, it's a lot more heat than light.
Yeah, so, but the thing we can impact, and that, I think this is what gets devalued all the time, the thing we can impact is our neighbors, the people around us, and people say they're too tired, don't have enough time to put it into that. So it's easier to rant about something on social media than it is to actually take some time, get to know your neighbor, hang out, make a difference in your community. And I love the emphasis of that because I think that's where power is.
And I do think that, you know, it's one thing to read that something that somebody has written. It's another thing to actually be with that person and to be able to converse back and forth so you do have an understanding. And it's like there's been so many people of recent date that I've met with that I probably would not agree with at all on most things politically. We would be on very different spectrums. But I have had the best time in engaging with them and understanding them and sort of the back and forth of just going like, wow, pretty hard to dismiss. They could have said that conclusion in a different form and I would have dismissed it. But because I was with them in a real conversation, can't dismiss that.
Yeah. And we have so little opportunity for that kind of thing, unfortunately.
Well, I don't think that's true. I think we take little opportunity for it. I mean, it's like I'm recognizing, you know, I have a whole bunch of choices I can make in terms of what I'm going to give my time to. And I'm just going like, I like the in-person engaged with people far better than the trying to communicate unto the masses right now.
Yeah, no, I hear that. And I always have a preference for that as well. Even the travels where I'm at, and you know, this one of the lakes I was on the week ago in South Carolina with a group of about 40 people, and we're talking through the Jesus journey, and not everybody's on the same page, and everybody was there because they were a fan of Wayne Jacobson. I was invited into a different group of people. Some were familiar with me, some were not so much. And just the joy of being able to work through that, and even in times like that, I enjoy much more the conversation over meals and sitting around than I do the
presentation.
We're all in, I don't do many presentations, but we're all in the same conversation, which kind of flits from here to here because this, that, and then it comes from over here, something else. Where if you're sitting down at a dinner table, you're really getting beneath the conversation is going to switch because someone else
genuine
is
genuine exchanges.
Point. Yeah. You get where life happens. And that to me is always better. But I've had this because I've wondered, I remember back being a young child. I remember being in first grade and we're planting a tree for Arbor Day. Our class, and we're doing it at the hospital, as I recall, and about 10 of us were shipped over there and we're doing it. There's a reporter there, and then they took a picture of us, and then it was who would like to be interviewed? And I remember I'm 6 years old, right?
Me.
I'm waving and screaming, and they chose some other kid who wasn't even waving and screaming like I was. And
this could have been your break.
Now, I don't know about that. I just thought a lot of it. What about me was wired at that age to wanting to be
seen and known.
Yeah. In a way that most people are like, what, are you crazy, man? What do you want to say to a... And I remember listening to talk radio as a kid, junior high school, going, man, I wish I could be on there talking and telling people what they ought to think. And I didn't start out wired well, I don't think, because that talking to the masses thing, that has been a drive,
a disease from the beginning.
It might be deep. I didn't choose this. It was foisted on me.
No, but, I mean, it probably had a lot to do with purpose and calling and just, you know, those elements, because most people are not like that, or at least they profess to not be like that. I think there's in our culture, there's a desire that says, I want to be valued. I think that's screaming.
I don't know that was my deal though.
No.
I get that you're saying other people have that. I don't know that it was that. It was just I thought I had this is going to be exposing. I thought I had better stuff to say at 12 than the adults I was listening to.
I had to be about my father's business. Yes,
no.
Come on.
No, not going messianic on you here. No, I just I thought, and I, as I was growing and watched new stuff and whatever, I always feel like even today I look at stuff going, you idiot. Here's how you could say that exact same thing. And whether it's the left or the right, it's just there's better ways to say what you're saying. But then I think, no, there's not. Because if I have the better way to say it, I might be sitting there. And I'm not sitting there. They are. So evidently it's not the better way to say it. But no, I love the fact that shifted in me. I when I read this stuff, I go, you know what? I would say 25 years ago, I was much more this kind of person that wanted the stage, wanted to speak to the masses, ignoring the personal people in my life. I think now much more, I'm sitting around our table Saturday night with four other people and just having the most incredible conversation and time together. And feel like I would rather do that than speak to any group of
because there's real engagement and buy-in to what is being conversed with. When it's just a one-way presentation, I don't know about you, but I can find myself just kind of totally bored or disengaged or, you know, kind of.
Even when you're talking?
No, I tend to be a little more engaged when I'm talking.
Okay.
No, but I do find even most of the way I talk today is far more engaged with the audience than presenting something.
Right.
Because I don't enjoy the lack of feedback to make sure we're communicating. Because I think I'm at this point where it's like, I'm over listening to me. I know what I think. I don't need to talk to me to know what I think. The only real value is if I have something to offer and is it being understood and how will I know unless there's some kind of back and forth engagement to go, is this fruitful for you? Because I'm not doing this for me.
Right.
And I actually love being freed from that pastoral need to be heard. You know, I have a big disdain for that. Just go like, oh gosh, that's a weird dysfunction.
Yeah, but I find myself, I mean, I don't find myself in many lecture settings anymore. I did a little bit of one a couple weeks ago for a group, but mostly I just say, if you want to have a conversation, I'm in. If you want to throw it open and, you know, put some guardrails on it so we're talking in this theme or that theme. But let's hear where people are really growing, exploring, struggling, particularly with stuff that I talk about a lot, which is either learning to live in the Father's affection or it's more relational forms of community that the body of Christ can experience. I mean, those are the two arenas in which I'm doing a lot of conversation. And what I know or what I think about that is pretty well out there already. So I don't need to go, let's go through something that I've published three books about and done something else. Let's talk about things you've read and heard and discovered and things you question and things you love and things you hate. And that'll lead to something more fruitful.
I spend a lot of my time really trying to help people identify where it is that they feel they're stuck. You know, what is not working versus what they're hungry for. Because I feel like so many people, it's like they really do. They're hungry for a genuine relationship with the living God. And it's so sad to me that so many people have to almost sort of be convinced of the possibility of that. I end up going like, I think deep in your knower, you know that's what you want. But it's almost as if so much of our religious instruction has kind of pushed us off that active expectation and given us some alternate set of beliefs so as to not leave myself open to disappointment that it's not happening.
Yeah, I think it's somewhat that, but I also think it's not necessarily pushing off the expectation. It just can't fulfill it. I mean, I was in a thing the other day. We're singing songs that, and some of the songs we sing in the Christian world are, you know, way over the top of beauty and intimacy and crawling there with God. And I mean, it sings a lot better than I think people live it. And so then people have this frustration of, you know, I feel it when I'm here. It's they're feeling, not so much the knowing of him. But I think where people end up kind of pushing off the expectation is it's been disillusioned so many times. They've tried to find their way into that relationship and not finding it. And I think for the reason you're saying, because you're mostly giving people religious tools. And those religious tools, primarily intellectual tools, they're not the same as engaging
a person,
the knowing of God himself, of who he is. Yeah. And so there's this endless desire to find the information I need that'll help me walk with God better, when there's no information that you need to walk with God better other than go walk with God. Go spend time and find him. And I think we've pushed people away from that with our wanting to keep these people in this little box of, we want you to think the way we think.
Why does religion devolve itself to sort of this knowledge transfer thing? I mean, I do end up going like, gosh, there's something bizarre that we've ended up with a words-only thing that was never meant to be a words-only. It was always meant to be a relational dynamic.
Yeah.
And I end up going like, why is it that we keep peddling information that it's like, you know, if I give you more specifics on the Greek and the Hebrew, somehow that's going to change it. And I'm going like, if it leads to relational engagement, it might. I mean, if that's what you're unveiling, that's awesome. But just information, I end up going like, no, God is not just an idea.
But that's all we have, right? I mean, we're talking about ideas. We're using words. We're talking about ideas. People can extrapolate those into principles. It's different than getting people, or it's different than the way I live. I live out of my heart. I don't live out of my head. I don't live out of my words only. But those are the only way you can't see my heart. I can't see yours, right?
In exchange with you, yes, I do. It's impossible not to.
But you're hearing it in my words.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think because we can control the words, and when people get in charge of stuff and need, what'd you say earlier? Need to have the voice heard on the stage or whatever you were saying.
My need for validation.
Whatever. It's easier to get people to think in terms of principles and expectations than it is to keep coaching people into a heart-level experience that's transformative. And to do that, you've got to be willing to let people make mistakes. You've got to be willing to let people struggle. And we're not good at letting people struggle. We're good at throwing the Band-Aid on there and, oh, well, just pray. Jesus, obviously, hearing your voice. Jesus. Well,
it's like we want to avoid the struggle. And I'm going like, yeah, but I don't know. And that's how you grow. That's how you learn.
Yeah, the old analogy of the butterfly emerging from the chrysalis. If you help it peel off the stuff, you're going to kill it. It needs the struggle for the wings to be strong enough for them to fly afterwards. And so if you just cut a butterfly out of its chrysalis, it dies.
Yeah.
And so I think it's all, you know, you don't read any bad motives in that. I'm just trying to help people, and I'm uncomfortable when people struggle. And I'm uncomfortable when people struggle. I'm uncomfortable when I sit down with someone and they're saying, Wayne, listen, I've been praying. I've been seeking God. I've been reading He Loves Me. I've read this. I read that. What else can I read? What else can I do? And I'm just saying, you know, you just need to stop reading everything. You really just need to find some time where you're going to hang your heart out in front of God, even if that seems like a great abyss and there's nothing there. But you're going to find some space to be where your heart can surrender to His reality. And that may take more than a 30-minute quiet time. That may take months of learning how to live out of my heart, how to get out of my head, out of finding the next principle I'm trying to follow, and learn to relax into the reality that this Father's making Himself known in you. And He's been doing that since the day you were born.
Why is that so hard for people to do? Because I do. It's easier to go grab another book, think it's just around the corner of another pack of information.
A seminar to go to. Yeah, some kind of conference.
As opposed to, because I'm just going like, there's no shortcut to getting to know God other than putting your soul in front of Him and struggling for the reality of that to come alive. As someone who has been the recipient of some encounters with God, I don't know how to unknow Him now, which is so awesome.
Yeah.
Because I'm going like, okay, I remember being frustrated talking to people who, well, you'll know when you know. And you just go like, oh, stop chasing my tail like that. That I don't get those words. But they constantly urged me to a place of, there's no shortcut. You've got to spend time in his presence getting to know him. And don't rush that, and don't pack it full of what you think it's supposed to be. Discover what it might become.
Yep.
And when I finally kind of just took God up on doing that, and I just was like, hey, God, I don't know what it's supposed to be like, and I don't want to pack it full of a whole bunch of things you're supposed to do. I don't know what it's supposed to do. I don't know what I'm supposed to do, but I really want to know you, and I'm not satisfied with where I'm at. Man, those became such wonderful moments where something did unfold that I didn't make up. You know, I look past the experience and you end up going like, okay, wow, could I have made that up? And it's like, no, I know I didn't make that up. I know I'm wrestling to try to understand what to do with it because I didn't always understand what it meant.
But, I still don't.
But I am so enjoying the fact that it's like I've learned a little bit of just how to put my soul in front of him and to wait for something real to happen and not be anxious about that and not feel like I somehow have to strive in that moment and work it up. But I had to run out of my exhaustion in my efforts to try to do that. I mean, I remember, you know, just thinking, okay, so – you know, I want to have an encounter with God. And it's like you feel totally self-conscious about everything that you're doing, and which seems to be an incredible barrier to I just kind of like, how do I not be conscious about my trying to do something? And I had some folks that gave me a wonderful suggestion is, hey, climb into the scriptures that actually give a description of who he is and park yourself there. And try to climb into that scene where you're looking at something that has been given to us in the scriptures. You know, God seated on his throne. What's it like to kind of crawl into that space and let that become real? I don't know how to make, because I don't know what it's supposed to be like, so I don't know how to make it happen. But those were helpful handholds that sort of demystified it for me a little bit.
Yeah, it does help. It helped me when I was younger to find people around you who are having those similar kinds of moments and can describe some of what's happening in their experience. And you listen, or you're having prayer meetings, for lack of a better term, or you're having worship times together, for lack of a better word again, but where you really sense God's movement and God's presence communally.
Uh-huh.
And then it helps you kind of sort it out individually.
Uh-huh.
If we separate the difference between what God really moving and what we're trying to recreate through our manufactured times like that, you know, and I think that's what causes some of the confusion with it. But I think one of the things that's really come fresh to my heart is that in our whole thing of words and knowledge and trying to figure it out in our heads, that this life in him is really discovered better than it's explained. And we've tried to explain it so much to people, or had it explained to us. And
right.
We're trying to understand it with our heads. So if I do this, God's going to do that, and I'm going to do. And we're so up there inside our head and inside of our second guessing everything that we really are not willing to say, okay, God, I'm willing to go on a journey with you here. And I'm willing to see how this pans out. And that's I'm freshly there with the books I talked about earlier, knowing what to do. And I've got all these options in front of me. None of them are good options. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, God, I'm ready to go on an adventure with you. I don't know how this is going to sort out. I really don't. But I think this is better discovered as life kind of unfolds, as this conversation happens. I meet that person. Somebody sends me an email. Doors begin to open. Things begin to change. I'm more willing to go on a discovery with you and with life as it unfolds around me than I am needing a full-blown strategy here I can codify into 10 pages of a mission statement and head off and go do it.
I find those very irritating right now. I've got a bunch of well-intended people that want those.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I get why you want that. I do. I just don't like living life that way because I find it manufactured. I don't find it in response to the living God because I don't know enough right now. You want answers to things that I know I do not know.
Yeah.
So I do not know how to fake it and put it down on a piece of paper that impresses you because you think that's what we need. Right. And I'm going like, I don't know that that's him. And what we need is him.
Well, that's the human mind, isn't it? I mean, that's when you deal the difference between living out of our humanity only or living also out of our spirit and our heart, which is going to, I think, be more engaged with an adventure. Because,
far more.
Because it's going to unfold. And when it unfolds, things come together and connect in ways. If you just try and, I look at most things in my past, if I just charted it out with my own best things in mind, it never got to the place I hoped it would. And because you're missing a lot of the little nudges to go down this road, because I've already got my track. I laid my railroad tracks here. I'm staying on it.
Ah.
And the things that happen when just something unfolds, a conversation opens a door into something you hadn't seen coming, and that pieces together, or a connection with...
See, I think that's the beauty of humility and dependence. Is if you've got a plan, you don't have the ability to course correct and respond to those moments if you're locked down to the commitment you made.
Yeah.
And I'm just going like, gosh, I understand a desire for, you know, accountability and for, you know, the next steps and the clarity of here's our plan.
You don't sound like you're understanding that.
No. I actually in wonderful pains understand why that is so desperately desired by people. But I think having lived enough life and realized, my gosh, my best laid plans never laid very well anyways, or they just laid there. Yeah. I mean, it's like they didn't have the same thing of life that it has been when you've gone on the adventure that says, look, start out fresh. I have no idea what we're doing, but I do know who we're doing it with. And I know that I'm engaged. And I know that he nudged me into this. And I said, yes.
Yes.
And those have proved to be far more transformative of my own life, far more fruitful in their impact on others. They have all ended up in different forms of train wrecks.
Right.
That I don't know how to avoid.
Yep.
Because I end up going like, gosh, at some point someone grabs a hold of this and does the selfish for them as opposed to holds it open for him.
And I think that's the high risk, right? Because if somebody has a plan and you can look over the plan, and I agree with this plan or I don't agree with this plan, we all know people who live like you and I talk about who've been part of some really wonderful things for God. We also know people who say, oh, they're listening to the Holy Spirit and they drive themselves and a whole bunch of other people into oblivion together. And I think so people go, okay, you know, I don't know that I want to trust that you're listening to right. God. I get that you're excited about that, but the more money you're asking for, obviously,
yeah.
is the more people want everything nailed down because that I'm now going to put some real stake in it. I look at just the thing we've been doing in Kenya over the last so many years. And there are actual, if I go back and tell the story to people, there are actually moments where we came up with a need that was beyond us, and then that day or within the next week met somebody unrelated to Kenya that had something for us that could move Kenya on, or had resource, or had sometimes it was money, sometimes it was a way to do what we were needing now to do. And there were other times where people were encouraging us, you got to set a plan, you got to do this from here. And I'm going, look, I'm not a missions guy. I'm not a Kenya guy. I have no idea how to create a plan. I've decided to go on a journey with Jesus here, and I'm going to let him unfold it. And I look back now going, oh my gosh, he saved our bacon a billion times. Mm. He did, just because he provided a person. I met with a guy who does sex trafficking work in Thailand who knew the very resource we ended up using to bring people in Phokat up to self-sustainability, that we're using that process. If I hadn't had dinner with him that night over something completely unrelated, I wouldn't have known about that resource. When I did hear about that resource, the people we have used to help train our people was going to be in Colorado 2 weeks after that. And I already had a trip in Colorado. So I got to spend a day with him because I was already there. I would have gone there anyway. And I look at the timing of God as that stuff unfolds. And now I sit back and go, that whole thing is a freaking miracle.
Yeah,
it wasn't Wayne's ingenuity. It wasn't certain people at certain times had it all. It was God bringing pieces of a puzzle together, and we got to watch it.
I think for me, I've come to a place of I trust that more than I do the best laid plans of men. Because usually the best laid plans of men are camped behind someone's very unspoken but genuinely their agenda, which is why they got a plan and they're bending everyone's commitment unto that. And you end up going like, okay, but I don't really trust that. I really do trust holding God's hand in the dark more than I do holding on to that 5-point plan.
And that's always Israel's dilemma, right? And throughout the Old Testament, it's, we got the Egyptians and horses and chariots on this side. We got trusting God on this side. And we've got, and you see that same thing, which I don't think we past the cross have been much different about. We tend to want to rely.
We keep going back into that old wilderness.
Yeah, to rely on human resource and human ability, because that we can scale. To trust the discovery of what God's about, and can we follow it well enough to muddle our way through into something more precious? I think we can. I think that's what he's offered us. But it's a risk. It's always a risk.
Yeah, but it is so much more filled with reward because you get to know him.
Yeah, whether it works out or not.
Yeah.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.